Welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, October 22nd, 2020, otherwise known as International Nut Day.
Like tree nuts? Are we talking tree
nuts? Talking tree nuts.
Well, that's a holiday that the Garys can get behind because that's their true. New favorite food is peanuts still in the shell because they that's get the fun one. Of cracking them open. Oh, it's a legume.
A legume.
Huh. Well, I just exposed my lack of nut knowledge.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
What are you How's guys working eye doing? On? Eye's doing great. Thanks for all the thoughtful, kind wishes that people sent my way. Really appreciate it. Eye's doing good. Still a little bit light sensitive and a little bit more blurry than normal, but I would say it's like 90% of the way there.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt anymore, which is the main thing, too.
You could have changed your channel name to One Eye temporarily. It could have been One Eye, Two Eyes, and Four Eyes.
Yeah. Then I'll get a monocle for the one good eye and back to Two Eyes.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Before we get into what we've been working on, just a real quick announcement at the top of the show. So we're actually going to extend the deadline for the Rockler Desk Challenge. We kind of figured since, you know, crazy times going on right now, we always did 6 weeks. So we just kind of went with that right from the top. But like, you know, even Ben has had some troubles. Mike's project is still in progress. So we figured everybody's having like a little bit more difficult of a time right now. So let's extend it for a couple weeks.
Let's not lie. Also, we're just not all on top of our stuff as Chris is. Chris got
as many of the listeners may not be.
Mike and Ben got one out.
I'm picking up the slack.
Although.
Yeah, I'm always impressed with how many videos Chris is able to release. Yeah.
One.
No, I'm just talking about from a week-to-week basis. It's impressive stuff.
I'm impressed by the fact that I used to release more when I had a 9-to-5 full-time job somehow.
Where'd the grind go?
I was just doing shorter projects.
Yeah,
that's true.
That was the big difference.
I actually did post a video of a desk already. It just wasn't a desk that I built. We launched that Kickstarter for Hook Furniture.
Mm-hmm.
All snap together CNC stuff. So the Kickstarter is live. It's doing really well. I think we've been averaging about $10,000 a day in sales, which is awesome. It's all like American made, sustainably minded furniture. And it's just really exciting to see a group of young designers and makers launch a product and that's made all in America. There's no overseas, you know, waiting on shipments for things to be manufactured by cheap labor. All made here in America by people getting paid a good wage, and it's made with good materials. So just excited to see something that's doing it the right way, succeeding.
Yeah, I had no idea you could pick up those 3/4 inch or 1 inch thick recycled plastic sheets. Well, the thing is, I always thought that that could have been a project or a product, but I never would have thought that they would have had the whole recycled plastic figured out yet. I figured that would have been a hurdle they would have had to cross.
Yeah, the HDPE is an interesting material. It feels like the guardrails on skateboards, like that kind of like almost like slick, waxy type plastic.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be really awesome for jigs and stuff because everything slides on it so nicely and it's hard. Yeah. You can't really like scratch it with your fingernail, but it's smooth and a little bit slippery. So I think it'd be... I might get a sheet or two of it just for messing around with. It machines really nice with a CNC or, you know, you can cut it really clean with a table saw. So I think I want to get a sheet or two and mess around with it a little bit because I think I could make some really nice minimal drawer slides with it.
That would work.
Yeah. So what'd you put together? I ordered the coffee table. I thought it looked really cool. It has kind of like the ellipse shaped top and bottom, but has square ends to it. It was a kind of nice shape. Yeah. I just think it looked really clean.
Getting those nice CNC shapes, right? Like that's, I guess, one of the advantages of it. You can do something that's not perfectly elliptical, but kind of has that trapezoidal, but with consistent rounded corners. Or, yeah, they have some really nice profiles to them, which kind of dress them up. I assembled on Instagram the desk that has a riser, and it all just clips together. It literally assembles in 60 seconds or less. I'm going to start. They also sent me some side tables and a coffee table as well. So I'm going to start assembling those on camera just throughout the Kickstarter just to give it little little boosts of attention here and there.
Nice.
Right on.
It's kind of similar to like when I first started, when I was selling that like flat pack furniture. Obviously that was all plywood, but not that I was the only person doing this kind of thing. Obviously lots of people do it. It's funny though. So it tangential to this. So I put out the video where I was using the X-Carve Pro to like try to make the chair that I make by hand. And a lot of the comments had to do basically like, they were saying like, oh, the problem with your workflow is that you're trying to kind of like recreate the handmade look when like you should lean into the fact that it's CNC and cut different types of joints. And I totally get that. And like, it totally would improve the workflow. Like a lot of the troubleshooting that I was having to work around would be solved by doing it the ways that various people suggested. But I don't know, I kind of felt like the whole point was like that I wanted to, not that there's anything bad with the CNC look, but like I was trying to achieve the not CNC look. You know what I mean?
I do. There starts to be, it's funny, like OpenDesk was the first time I saw like a big push towards open source CNC furniture, but they all ended up selling for like thousands of dollars for like a desk, and it did have that kind of CNC knocked together look.
Yep.
And people are like, it's so efficient, this is the future. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not an efficient cut list. So it's, yeah, there are some advantages. There are some biases or aesthetic tendencies that result from it. Mm-hmm. And the main thing is just to be in control of it. So you're doing everything intentional. Totally cool to play up the CNC look. Totally cool to try to use it to disguise it. And there might even be a point where you figure out where these are the points of the in the project where I want to emphasize that aesthetic, and these are the parts where I want to downplay it for some sort of perceptive choice. Like you might want to be like, I want to look like it's easy to assemble here, but I want this part to look like it's big and solid and, you know, not CNC'd.
Yeah. What did you just say? Not CNC'd. Sorry,
not
I thought you
un-CNC'd.
Okay. I think that maybe this was like the early on thing, but yeah, there were very much was the like, this is CNC'd and this is not. And now there's like kind of a hybrid. I would probably guess that like almost every piece of furniture that you get, if it's not like a custom made thing, probably has some kind of CNC involved with it somewhere. Like it is just another tool.
It is pretty common now.
Yeah. I think it's becoming more common.
Not to mention, this is the first time this week that I've been doing a real woodworking project, and humans are slow, dude.
You'd love to have a CNC cutting that castle joint.
Yeah, but I do have cool news. That video should be coming out either this weekend or like Monday. It's just a couple days of building and a couple days of editing, and we'll be good to go.
Nice.
So I don't have a huge update other than the fact that it went well, and I learned quite a bit about joinery again. It had been so long that it was nice to dust off the boots a little.
How long did it take you to like cut each of those castle joints? Did it take a long time?
Well, I definitely did it the DIY way. So I did 4 castle joints in like a day and a half. So I was not fast, but I cut all of my pieces by just doing the perimeter of each side with the circular saw. Mm-hmm. And then kind of just taking a few chunks out of the middle to get some of the meat out.
Okay.
Then hammer. Because the circular saw has a circular shape to the blade, I followed those cuts up with the jigsaw to get them squared off, because the last thing I'm going to do is start with the jigsaw. I want to make sure I've got a good line to start with.
Right.
Then I used a chisel to chisel everything out and then sanded everything to clean it up. So it was just kind of labor and time, but it gave me some podcast listening opportunity. There you go. So it wasn't the worst
thing. Good chance to catch up.
Yeah, I found a cool new tool, and it's a cheap tool. Shout out to Brett, who's always at Maker Ranch, for showing me one of his kind of, I don't know, he uses a lot of hand tools all the time. He's into blacksmithing. He's into building things the way they built things a couple hundred years ago. So he gives me what's just called like a half round file. And I know you guys know what this is. Like every grandpa's toolbox has like 30 of them, it seems like. Mm-hmm. But it's just a file where on either side, there's like a relatively smooth file and a relatively coarse file for filing wood. One side is flat and the other one is like a little half moon shape.
Yeah.
My entire life, I thought that those were for metal because it looks like a metal file. It looks similar. Mm-hmm. But Brett gave me the quick rundown. He's like, no, use this on wood. It's really easy and it's great because if you need something square, it'll do something square. But if you need to sand a contour, you can do that too. And it doesn't take up any sandpaper. So as I was working on these joints, I did the castle joints with the chisel, but I actually found on the lap joints that I had to make for the apron pieces that go inside of the legs.
Right.
I basically did the same approach, but instead of using the chisel, I just continued to use the jigsaw to cut the end of the joint, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then just came back with that little half round file. And it is both aggressive and super smooth. It is the perfect in between where it gets through the material quickly, but gives you a good finish. And it turns out they cost like $12 at Home Depot. So if anybody's out there making some projects and they don't have a half round file, that is my current obsession.
Yeah.
Are we ending already?
Rest. No. Yeah. Jimmy DiResta reminded me that files are kind of like underutilized by a lot of kind of more contemporary makers. But I always have a question, like, is there a file called a bastard file?
I hear that, but I don't know what it actually is.
Bastard file?
Yeah, and I want to know maybe which one's the bastard file. I know there's a bastard sword.
File out there can tell us.
I think a bastard sword is like an in-between length sword, but I think there's something called a bastard file.
That makes sense.
So what you're describing is the file that is the most common. It's the kind where you can stick the handle on it if you want. It's kind of got that little tapered kind of tenon on the end of it.
Doesn't belong to anybody.
So I've used one of those, and I hot glued and then duct taped and then pipe clamped it to a sawzall or reciprocating saw blade.
Yeah.
So I had to file down some metal, and I was like tired. And
nice.
It kind of did the trick. It was a little too flexible at the sawzall blade part. Got a little bit of filing done.
Welcome to the future.
a good file. I guess even a bad file. Like it's pretty good. And I guess I've always used like them pizza on metal, so that like made such a bias of it being like slow and tedious. But you get those rough ones on wood, and they can blow through, especially a soft wood like you're using.
You guys should try them on styrofoam. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the cool part is, in that situation, I was running my head on how I was going to make a sanding block. You know, I would have taken a thin chunk of wood, used some spray adhesive to get some sandpaper on there, and then done the whole thing. But you don't ever even have to replace the sandpaper on a file. You know, it's perfect. It's just always ready to go. So,
nice and coarse. Hey, you should make nice sandpaper out of metal.
Probably stir paint with it, too.
Probably what?
It would be a great paint stirrer. Yeah. That is the dedicated paint stirring file.
Nice.
Chris, what do you got going on?
I'm doing the plans for our dining table and for our dining chair. So those are, the dining table's done. Dining chair is 90% done. I'm just like,
hey,
I over option things on all of the plans. That's like a reoccurring theme, is that I'm always like, well, you could also do a back that's like this. And so I was going to make two chairs. Now I'm making three chairs just because I had too many different options that I wanted to try out for like different seats and different backs and stuff. So
too many save as is in the workflow. Oh,
you guys should see I'll post some pictures of like my SketchUp files, because I'll always have like one file that just has like 10 chairs that are like going in columns and then going in rows, where there's like slight variations to everything, but I don't want to throw them away and just like go with something new. So it gets pretty messy after a while.
When I was doing more architecture, I would option myself into like oblivion. I'd be like, and if I do this, then this is better. And I'd make these like little post-it notes that I'd have for option 3.AB, it has advantages here, but then there. And so it's almost like with design, you can be creating a lot of options, like kind of like that's where you're like planting seeds. But eventually, to finish stuff and get something done, you got to sort of do a little bit of pruning or a little hedge trimming.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of widening of the option field and then the narrowing it back down.
How often do the people who build stuff where they just kind of like fly by the seat of their pants, something I've never done, where you just go out there and you start building it, like, do they have a lot of regrets about decisions they've made?
No regrets.
Deadlines. No regrets. Deadlines.
No regrets.
Deadlines minimize that kind of optionality, right? So if that's you're under... True. That's why everyone gets stuff done in a hurry when they have to, because it like you don't dabble with the luxury of optionality.
It's a good point.
So a lot of dilly-dallying. Whenever I start a project early, I dilly-dally. I'll be like, oh, and I could do this, and I could do this, and I sketch it 100 times. But when it just has to get done, I
get it done.
You just keep relying on those gut decisions, and Yeah. And it also helps you kind of keep it simple sometimes too.
For sure.
Yeah.
I got to, going back to your project, Ben, when you picked back up on it, did you have to pick up right where you left off with drilling holes in metal?
Yes.
What a scary day.
How was it? Yeah.
I had like 4 more holes to drill.
Oh man, you were so close.
I double wrapped it with safety glasses and then a face mask over. Yeah, it was a little weird, but you know, got it done. Really happy with how the project came out.
Yeah, it looks cool.
The video should be out right around when this podcast is out. I put a little teaser of the finished product on Instagram. People seem to like the mullet desk idea.
Mm-hmm. And are you gonna title it that? Probably not.
I think I'm just gonna say DIY home office plus bar. Like,
nice.
That's it. Just
that says it all. Yeah. Strict and to the point.
One, I really like that use of Ipe. Like, I think it's a really good use of what that wood's great at. It's so hard. It's hard to dent. Like, I nicked it against, you know, because moving around all those slats, I dropped a couple on the steel frame, no dents in it. Whereas like if that would have been walnut, one, it would have been way more expensive, but also, you know, it just would get kind of messed up. So I like it as kind of like a wall shield and with just a oil finish. I couldn't actually use simple finish. I had to use like a specially formulated oil. I guess for like teak and these harder woods, you need an oil that's denser than the oil and the wood so that
otherwise it floats on top. That makes sense.
So like boiled linseed oil will float on top of the oil in a lot of tropical hardwoods. So got it all oiled up. I did use simple finish on the steel parts, which is really handy because I could assemble it first and then finish it, which is really nice. And I think I found a home for it. It's one of those weird projects. Like I built it for myself. Like this is the project. This is the type of desk I would really want. I typically like to live in like loft style apartments or homes where it's really open, but then my workspace is often really messy. So I think it is like perfect for someone like me that could just like, if I'm having guests over, just push it all against the wall and hide all the post-it notes and Home Depot receipts and random SD cards and stuff. I'm giving it to actually the founder of Conway Electric, who's like a friend of mine. And we're actually about to launch a new liquor brand. I'm getting into the liquor business. So I worked for Conor McGregor. Might as well give it a try. Mike and I made some old fashions with it.
Yeah, what's that stuff called? It's a mixer or it's a liqueur. It's
right.
not
it's a tamarillo.
It's not like a whiskey or anything.
Right. It's a tamarind liqueur. And
it's good.
Yeah, it's got a nice little flavor, little kick to it. So
yeah,
we'll be doing some bar carts and fun stuff like that in the future when we launch that. So yeah, he came by to drop off the first few bottles hot off the distillery, and I guess they weren't that hot, but they were fresh.
Room temperature.
And you know what? I think I'm going to, he really liked the bar, so I think I'm going to pass it off to him and know that I got a good working prototype in, and very, very excited with the video. It's a fun one. It's a big project that looks pretty nice and fairly high end. But again, just real simple hand tools, angle grinder, welder, and we use a table saw for this one, which is a little bit unusual for my projects, but you know, just use the rigid contractor saw, nothing too fancy, and made a whole bunch of sticks, and yeah, I really like it.
Yeah, I like that project. My takeaway on it was those cool little ball bearing casters.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you could get those that were like load weighted. I thought they were only for... like what we were talking
material
about before for
conveyance.
Material handling. Right. I thought it was for conveyor belts or for, you know, roller stands. I didn't know you could get them that could support weight. Very cool.
Nice. Well, why don't we take a quick break and then we'll answer some more questions. Thank you, Storyblocks, for sponsoring this episode. If you're unfamiliar with them, Storyblocks is the complete stock solution, providing an unlimited library of high-quality, royalty-free video, audio, and images through cost-effective subscription plans. So if you're a creator and you ever find yourself stuck because you're looking for that perfect sound effect or B-roll clip or a template to adapt into a graphic, or maybe your agency's always in need of stock photos or illustrations, Storyblocks is perfect for you. So, for example, you're probably used to seeing these kinds of assets on my and a lot of other content creators' videos that you see, but you probably don't even realize it. In fact, you just heard a little music sting when we transitioned from the episode into this ad read, and you're going to hear another one when we transition out. And whether it's graphics, music, or anything, that's what Storyblocks is perfect for. Professional assets that elevate your projects that you either don't have the time or maybe even the skill to produce on your own. Now, there's a few things that help to make Storyblocks different, but my favorites are, one, you can use the content you download anywhere, including YouTube, and it's royalty-free for commercial and personal use. And two, they're always adding new content and updating things to make it the best possible experience for users. So head over to storyblocks.com/modernmaker to learn more. Again, that's storyblocks.com/modernmaker, or click the link in the description. All right, thanks, Storyblocks. Now let's get back to the show. Okay, so continuing on with the questions that we were fielding 2 weeks ago during the 200th episode, this one comes in from eHingeryman17. Although this one could be timely because I think it would have already happened, but they said makes giving this year or no because of COVID, which it was like early October, right?
Yes, we did it last year, first week of October. So COVID has canceled official makes giving, but we did have a mini one this weekend. Our boy, Jimmy DiResta, godfather of the making community on YouTube. Pew, pew, pew. Love Jimmy. Jimmy is, I always say it, it's like if you've only watched his videos and you kind of really enjoy them and you imagine what he'd be like in person, he's exactly what you want him to be. He's genuine. Yeah. He's authentic. He's consistently the kind of funny, brilliant, crazy maker coot that we all love so much. And it was just cool to get him out in Joshua Tree. Rachel Metz was out as well. We were looking at some real estate stuff with her and, you know, giving a little input on some house project things. And yeah, it was a fun little crew. Did the Maker Ranch special dinner, tri-tip, rice, a little few vegetables, and a good time was had by all.
Facts. Yeah, it was a pretty good time. We got to show off my new place, yes, which was pretty cool.
And the bus.
So they got to see the befores, got to see the bus. Got to hang out a little bit and show Jimmy the Joshua Tree experience a little.
Nice.
Yeah. Everything's closed right now, so we didn't get a ton of nature, but at least we gave him the Maker Ranch experience. But he's in town shooting Making It, which is pretty exciting. Not his podcast, the TV show.
Yeah.
His other Making It.
The less, right. The less revered Making It.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully... I think they're oh, go ahead.
Now you go for it.
I was going to round it. I was going to say, hopefully in 2021, there can be a Makesgiving again. An official big one. All right.
I think so.
Next question.
I think so. I'm optimistic.
Okay. We're all optimistic here. Next question comes in from TT Builds. He says, what was the craziest thing that you did for a thumbnail pick? Any crazy things you've done for thumbnail picks?
Nothing too insane. I don't go too far out there.
How
I've definitely
often,
like
or
done
have
a
you
lot
ever
of reshooting.
Like, yeah, that's what I was going to say. The reshooting.
Yeah, I've done a lot of reshooting to kind of get one that I felt was right. There's been, put it this way, there's been 3 or 4 trips with the memory card back and forth between computer and camera to try to find it right.
Yeah.
But it's important. And well, it's important and it's hard because it's when you take a picture, you think so much about the quality of photography and all these things. But a thumbnail is right. So small that it has to be so over emoted and has to read from such a little tiny, you know, 1-inch rectangle on somebody's screen in maybe a dimly lit room. So I haven't done anything too misleading where I, like, you know, photoshopped the, you know, something kind of gravity defying or anything like that. But shout out to my boy, John Malecki. Love you.
There we go. Okay. I was waiting if you were going to call him out or if I was going to have to. Just kidding. It's all love, John.
Yeah. No, so nothing too much like that. It's funny. The most unintentional clickbaity accusation that I ever got was for the first wood-fired hot tub. And I built it at my parents' house and I had to leave. So it was like the last, and I was finishing it up and it was starting to get dark. So I'm like, Jesse, get in the hot tub. I got to shoot the thumbnail. And so I was like filming and you know, tending to the fire. So Jesse makes no appearance in the video except for the thumbnail. And it's like, all you see is her head out of the side of the tub. It's like, it's like not a provocative shot in any capacity. I'm not going to edit a provocative photo of my sister. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Like, what a good weird. Brother.
So it's like a totally benign shot from the side. You just see metal tub and her head sticking out of it. Like, someday go look at the comments and look at all these pervy losers that are just saying clickbait. I clicked on the picture for the girl. I'm like, first of all, this is YouTube, not you porn. Like, what are you expecting? It's not going to be crazy. This is YouTube.
Right. But people, but like, you weren't exactly clickbait. Like thirst trapping. Yeah, that was not a thirst trap. It was just a profile shot. Yeah.
Clickbait. So when I did this new, literally somebody made Jesse a shirt that said clickbait because there was so many comments on that video. And it's one of the more viewed videos I've done on YouTube.
Yeah.
Somebody made Jesse a shirt called clickbait because it was so unintentional. It was just like, I wanted to keep operating the camera and tending to fire and monitoring the water temperature. So it was like purely a practical decision that ended up about probably 500 dudes called clickbait on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I made this new 1 hour hot tub video recently, I made sure to do the exact same thing just to really piss them off. Yeah. That's the most I've gotten called out on a clickbaity thing, but wasn't intentional at all.
I think this isn't really crazy, but like I've done a lot of what you're talking about for the reshoots, but for the one that me and Johnny Brooke did together, we did that like plywood platform bed thing with the many years ago with the backlit headboard, and I wanted to get and the thumbnail that is still up today has where there's like a diagonal line going across the screen where it's like daytime and nighttime. So I always set everything up in the living room, which is like dead center of my house, a lot of traffic walking through there, and so I think I had to like for 6 hours yell at the kids not to like touch the tripod or move anything because I needed to get the exact same shot like 6 hours apart. So it's not crazy, but a little bit of a
I remember
a
when you
crazy.
Posted that video, a lot of people were commenting like, wow, you really used a lot of plywood. And in hindsight, this is the first time I've seen this in probably 2 years. You used a lot of plywood.
I did. I think it was like 7 sheets or something like that.
Yeah, it looks really cool, though. I like it.
Yeah, Chipotle uses more than that for every franchise that goes up.
Yeah. It looks like one of those projects people turn like reclaimed beams into beds with, but it's just a lot of stacks of plywood. I like
it. All right. Anything crazy for you, Mike? Or
nah, man, I just take a picture and
call it a day. Move on.
Yeah. I just use the heel tool on some grain that I don't like. You know, if I've got an ugly knot, I'll get rid of that or something like that. But you just clickbaited, though, on this CNC video you put out.
I get it. Yeah.
You didn't do anything crazy, but you kind of clickbaited.
A little bit. Sure.
A little.
I'll take my medicine. All right.
Can a single tool change your entire workflow?
Maybe.
I have to find out.
News at 11. What tool Not that is he even talking to find about? Out. Not that many people wanted to. So it doesn't work. All right. Next question.
That's because they come to you for substance, Chris.
That's right. They're not here for...
All right.
You won't believe. All right.
Yeah.
Hypothetical. Something we haven't done for a while. Sleep on flat concrete bed every night or only wear concrete clothes? I feel like that's a pretty easy one. The
concrete bed. Because you could still have a mattress. You didn't say concrete mattress.
Ooh. Good point. But also, what are concrete clothes?
I have some
they would
concrete
have to be brittle.
Clothes. Because I worked in concrete so much. And then they got wet and there's like little like crackly parts.
Like, man, that shirt's got really nice structure. Where'd you get that?
Yeah, structure.
Yeah, nice.
But if you ever needed a Lego Man Halloween costume, that would be it.
There's how to do it. Just borrow some of Ben's
clothes.
That's
actually kind of like a good idea. Like, that would actually be a cool project if we got like oversized. Like, I borrowed a shirt from Paul Jackman and then like made like a squared up mold and then like hung it on that plywood mold and then just poured plaster or concrete to make it all rigid.
Like, man, Ben has really broad shoulders.
No, it's more triangular shoulders to waist. That's the
that's the look you're going
for. Classic
for.
Lego Man trapezoid physique.
I mean, that is a viral video. Making a life-size Lego Man?
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, sorry, I had to use YouTube title voice on that one.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right, what else we got?
How have you seen the pandemic impact woodworking as a craft slash community?
Construction lumber's expensive now.
Is it really?
Twice as expensive as it used to be.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't know
Holy
that.
Holy cannoli. Yeah.
So I was talking to my contractor that I'm using for my next house, and he says lumber is 2 to 3 times the prices here in California. And I guess it's for a combination of reasons. Yeah. One, COVID has reduced capacity of the mills because they have to have more social distancing while they're working. And the bigger short-term one is the fires have actually burnt down, I think, 2 of the larger lumber mills in Oregon and California.
Oh, wow.
In addition to some logging areas that they were currently logging. So the supply has been both reduced by the increasing frequency of these fires, and the production has slowed down from COVID.
And then I wonder if there's any more, are people building more also? So demand has gone up?
I think there's only 1.3 million homes, single family homes available for sale in the US right now. I think around this time last year and a year before, it was closer to like 2 to 4 million, somewhere in that range. So COVID has driven home sales, which then is encouraging new home starts. But I'm not sure that those enough homes have started to actually eat up the supply to do that. So it might be they're anticipating that future demand. Which might be why they're raising prices now.
Got it.
Yeah, and I'd have to imagine any kind of importing has to be complicated from it too if the wood isn't domestic.
Yeah, I think as far as it's affecting woodworking itself outside of sort of the raw material flow and trade, I think one, people are home more so they can do more home-based hobbies, and definitely home improvement is way up as a practice, but I would say that it's not affecting woodworking. It's affecting domesticity, is that it's really fundamentally changing that your home isn't just some place where you keep your stuff and sleep at night and cook an occasional meal. It's become the center of everybody's lives. It's where they work. It's where they try to be productive. It's where they exercise. And it's also where they need to feel a sense of safety and normalcy. So I think that's the bigger thing. Now, I think how woodworking can take advantage of this is customizing the home. Most of us don't live in homes that were built for us. But if you know a little bit of woodworking, and chances are you do, if you're listening to this podcast, you have the ability of what so many people are frustrated to fix, customize, and adapt to the current living situation that you're in. And that is a powerful thing that can make life better. And even if those improvements aren't super luxurious, just knowing that you can control your physical environment in that aspect, it does bring some sort of sense of pride, joy, and perhaps just a little bit of way to work off some of the anxiety.
I think you answered that whole question for all three of us. Although Mike did start it off. He said lumber's gotten more expensive. So
yeah.
You two answered it for me. Thank you very much. All right. This one also, same asker, Pogue Creations, says, hot dog in a hamburger bun or hamburger in a hot dog bun?
Definitely the hot dog in the hamburger bun, because you only need to use one side of a hamburger bun per hot dog.
Just taco it up.
And it's less bread.
Yeah, you make tacos.
A little poking out the end.
I don't know. Exactly. I might go hamburger in a hot dog bun, just chop it up into little chunks. And
yeah.
It's like a really bad Philly cheesesteak or something.
Well, I feel like it's an easier... A big juicy hamburger can be a little bit sloppy and get all over the place.
It's enclosed.
And once you pile on those toppings, and if you do double patty, double cheese, as we do in America, and you start piling on the pickles and all those fixings, it can get a little bit too tall. I once was faced with this dilemma where I only had hot dog buns and I had hamburger meat. So
what'd
I rolled the hamburger meat like sausages.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And it's not great for on a grill, but it's great if you're only pan frying your burgers, because you can kind of just keep rolling them over to evenly cook the outside. So
yeah,
it actually came out pretty solid. Did a little bit of cheese. The melting the cheese on the top for the cheeseburger part was a little bit harder because the cheese hit the skillet. And then it got that you don't want cheese on your nice cast iron seasoned pan, because then you got to scrape it off. I prefer a spatula or one of those flexible putty knives comes in handy. Yeah, it can be done in a pinch, and you can make the most out of it and make a very special kind of, like, you know, burger dog.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need some names for this. But I got a hot take here that I just thought about while you're talking. Haven't had one in probably 5 years or so, but I think Sloppy Joe's, which as a kid I always ate out of a hamburger bun, would be way better out of a hot dog bun.
Okay, Chris, you are really onto something here, because pulled pork.
Yeah.
Pulled pork.
Barbecued pulled pork is so good in hot dog buns.
There you go.
So it makes sense. It's kind of all the same family.
Sloppy Joe's just a poor man's pulled pork.
We have to have an innovative cooking night when the three of us are together. Because I feel like with the three of us together, last time we just all ate ice cream. So we're probably going to go junk food anyways. Oh, yeah. But Mike can make his famous double-decker tacos.
I'll make some manwiches.
Make some manwiches, nice. And I'll make some linear hot dogs.
Yeah, some burger dogs.
Burger dogs.
I like Perfect. It.
These Looking are great questions.
Now you guys
I like
know
how the past two episodes.
Now you know the menu for next year's Maker Ranch.
Oh, no. We've gotten
stick with
pretty
the
good here at entertaining a lot of people without spending all day slaving in the kitchen. Like me, Jesse, and Brett, we have our routine down. Like the minute I turn on the grill, we send the whitest guy to go make the rice. It just feels like, you know, to make up for, you know, bad things that happened in the past. So we send Brett in to make the rice, and then Jesse starts the broccoli. I'll cook like the tri-tip or the chicken or whatever we're grilling. It's like we just got to flow, and we're able to like cook for like, you know, 10 to 12 people, like pretty effortlessly. And yeah, it's always like a good meal. And every once in a while, we got some vegetarians or people like that. So we throw on some portobello mushrooms or a little grilled polenta or something like that. But yeah, we got a good system.
Next time I'll bring a cheesecake that my mom makes that I'll say that I made. I'll just tell you guys I made it right now. I'm making a cheesecake next time.
I will mess around with the cheesecake.
Great delivery, Chris. Well, I'm going to make one next time, so you guys are in luck. All right. How deep are we? Should we do more questions? Should we do obsessions?
Let's do one
more. Let's do two quick ones. We've been burning through these questions.
All right, here we go. Here's another one. 200, now 202 podcasts in. How has the workflow of making the podcast changed since the first one? I guess the biggest thing is we don't edit it. I think we've always been pretty loose from the get-go, but now we're probably even looser. Like, I think we at least used to be like, what's a good topic for the show this week? Maybe a day or two before. Now we're just like, you guys ready to record? Yeah. Okay. And then we just start talking.
The podcast is an extension of who we actually are and what our actual relationship with each other is. So that relationship has gotten stronger over the years. You know, when we started, we hadn't met each other yet. Now we've done investment deals together. We've done a ton of projects together. We've done this weekly project together for 202 times. So I guess it's only really changed as that sort of relationship has changed and become stronger and more substantial. So I think it's just gotten easier. Don't mean that, like, it's still the same amount of work that it's always been, which is, you know, coordinate the time, show up, try to stay on top of things. I think the hardest part is just consistently having good energy at the same time that the other two do. There's just going to be some days where, you know, like lately we've been recording around like 8:30 at night, and you know, that could mean that we've put in 10 to 12 hours of work already.
Right.
And then this is the last thing. So sometimes we have a few glasses of wine and get a little loose and it gets really silly. And other times the energy is going to be a little bit lower. But that's just a reflection of what we're going through at that day and that time. So I really like it. I like the intentionality of talking to two of my friends for an hour every week, regardless of what's going on in the world. Like, I think that's like a really cool thing. So I encourage all of you people, even if you're not trying to do media or anything else, like schedule a weekly call with like two of your good friends, maybe not for an hour, but for like half an hour, maybe like once every other week, or just put it on the calendar. Otherwise, it's just too easy to go too long without sort of catching up with people that you actually enjoy chatting with.
Yeah, it's like the verbal version of sketching a notebook for 5 minutes a day or something.
Right.
For sure. And I think back in the day, we used to have a little bit more of a rigid formula. You know, we had our intro, we had our topic, we had, I remember we had all kinds of things. Like there was the hypothetical segment of each episode. Right. There was the Ben's food analogy, but I don't think that ever stopped. I don't think we've still had an episode without a Ben food analogy. We just haven't planned it. Yeah, it's impossible to avoid, but it's just that, man. The flow has gotten easier, and the cool part is there's nothing to prepare. It's what's happening and what's our reaction to what each other are working on. It's so clean, and it's so fun, too. It's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like the one hurdle at this point, honestly, is technology.
Yeah. It has been tough the past couple of months, weirdly.
Yeah, internet's gotten worse.
Mike's internet's been a little bit spotty. We've had some issues with some of the recording software that we use. And
some files not saving.
On Ben's side. Yeah, since Ben's and throwing me under the bus, I'm going to make sure and let everyone know he's got some hardware issues.
Yeah.
Apple does with QuickTime.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no joke.
We're looking into some new stuff. And one of the things that we want to sort of eventually get to is video podcasts. We know there's a lot of people that like to watch podcasts on YouTube kind of in the background. So that's something we're looking into, is into figuring out, you know, building out some sort of studio space where at least me and Mike can be in the same location. And then we zoom Chris in.
A hologram.
Yeah. So
nice.
We'll figure out some way to do eventually turn this into a video podcast, too. It's fun. It's still work. And it's still something like, oh, we can do it tonight. And there's sometimes where it's like, oh, I'm slammed. I got to finish this. I got a deadline for a sponsor. But most of the time we get it done, and I can't believe we've done 202 episodes. It's crazy.
It is pretty ridiculous. Who knows how long it'll go? All right.
At least 205.
Hopefully. That's the over-under right now. It's 205. Should we pick some favorites?
Yeah.
Of what we've seen for the Rockler Desk Challenge. Still going on.
Chris, you go first this time. I want to hear yours.
Okay. So mine comes in on Instagram from a.mirrorcreators. I would describe it as, picture a wall-mounted, like, floating shelf, but it's a box that then has a diagonal cut in it, and it hinges out to open up into basically like a wall-mounted floating desk. So it just looks like a bookshelf. It's got some books and like a plant sitting in it, in the way that he staged it in the photo. Used a nice pop of color. Looks like it might be maybe Baltic birch plywood, can't tell, but a light colored plywood with like a kind of tealish blue inside. Nice pop of color. Then it just opens up into, I'd describe it as, I guess, like a writing desk.
Yeah.
So those are I won't say a simple project, like the woodworking aspect of it would be relatively simple, but the conception of it would be the more challenging part. And it's cool because it's like, it's just something you haven't really seen, like, or, you know, you've probably seen things similar, but I haven't quite seen that. So that's always the most exciting part of these challenges for me. And this one satisfies that desire.
I love this one. I saw it and I shared it on my stories. What I love about it, it's simple to understand, but I wouldn't say it's simple or easy to make, right? When you look at it, you immediately understand both how the geometry and the physical mechanism of it all works. You're like, oh, it's like a box that folds into a triangular box that then creates more extension, which gives you a better desk surface, but then it folds into this nice shelf cubby, which is still useful in its closed position. And you understand that all in a second from looking at it. He didn't try to hide the hinges. He just used nice looking hinges on the side. Right. But then you think like, wait, do I cut triangles and then cut them and then do it? Or do I make a box and then cut the box at an angle?
Yeah.
So I really like it. I think this is like, it's so cool because maybe that's like $15 worth of material at the most. I mean, it's probably like a $5 set of hinges, $8 worth of plywood and $2 worth of paint. Like, but it's a great looking project that can add a lot of functionality, and it's like a clever little detail. Like, that's how you can customize your domestic environment and make your house better. Even if, you know, and you could probably find a scrap piece of plywood like that if you dug around like the back of a cabinet shop or something. Mike, what do you got for yours?
I'm going to shout out Tall Guy DIY. Now, I don't know this guy's actual height, but I'm going to assume he's above 5 feet. You know what I'm saying?
It's got to be.
but he came out with a cool project. It is a good, what do you say, use case of laminates. It's a clean L-shaped desk that I just think it looks super functional and well executed. Not a completely mind-blowing design, but like I said, super functional, super well executed. I love the fact that it's got an L-shaped top. I've been wanting a desk like that for a while. I think it would be really useful to have that one side that can always be cluttered, but then you can have one side that's consistently clean. And what I also enjoy is on this project, the exposed plywood edges, but having the laminate on the counter as well as on the cabinets. I think it's a cool combination. And yeah, it's just a well-executed project. I think it's super cool.
He's got a pretty sick desk set up too. He's got an Xbox there. He's got a headphone stand. He's got some kind of pot that's in like a broken concrete pot planter thing. Dual monitors. Looks like he could do some podcasting.
Oh, and his name is Mike. So from one mic to another, great work.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's at tallguy.diy. Check that out.
So mine is from someone on Instagram called past.envy, hailing out of St. Augustine, Florida. And they just made a really clean, minimal desk that looks great. And it's a fantastic DIY project. If you need a desk that fits, and it looks like they designed it right for this nook in...
Yeah.
I'm not sure what room it is, but it fits this length of this wall perfectly. So this is exactly why DIYing is important. If you have this weird little space that's left over and you need a workspace, you can build a desk like this for probably in one day. Not a lot of money. This could easily be made out of one sheet of plywood. So fantastic project. It looks great. It matches the wall color. Nice, clean, painted baseboard trim. Like, it just looks like a nice place to sit down and crank out some emails.
Right. And nice. For every project, I'm going to always name. That's going to be my new thing moving forward. I'm going to name everything that's on the person's desk. This has got a coffee mug, a computer, a picture, a notebook, and a potted plant.
Someone's going to put something really inappropriate on a desk just to make you.
Yeah. Hey, I'll do it.
So I got one more that I just want to give a shout out to.
Boy.
And so one of the designers that always sort of inspired me was this man named Enzo Mari. And he just passed away. He lived a fantastic life to 88 years old. And he was one of those early sort of like modernist designers. But he was one of the ones that wasn't trying to use modern design just to make fancier and more expensive things. And when I was a student, all I saw was like people trying to like rocket ship to like the top of the design world and create like the fanciest, coolest, most expensive, most prestigious stuff. They were basically like rappers, and they were trying to differentiate themselves through like their access to consumption and doing cooler stuff. And there was like two really important figures in my education that sort of shaped, my interest into where they are now. One was this guy named Samuel Mockbee, who started doing the rural studio where he was designing affordable houses and like in the South and showing that you can do interesting design in places that don't have a lot of money. And this guy, Enzo Mari, kind of did it in Italy. And he just did this. It's really cool looking furniture where he made like these trusses, and it's super simple, but it's like a step elevated beyond just plain, butt joints and stuff like that. But it's all done for like good reason to make more stable stuff that's more sturdy, even if you're using like thin leftover pieces of wood. So check out his work, Enzo Mari. It's pretty inspiring. It is totally ready. That style stuff, Mike, I could totally see you like knocking out some cool, like kind of truss tables like that and then throwing some color in them. He has a really amazing body of work and was a really great man. So shout out to him.
It's cool. Yeah, I gave him a Google and I do like his work quite a bit. It's funny, whenever I saw little thumbnails of the furniture that he had designed, at first I was like, how is he making CNC furniture? Because it has that sort of truss,
right?
Like where everything sort of transformers together kind of look. But yeah, it's what you're saying. It's like all kind of rustic, simple material, but just really interestingly, what would you say, assembled?
Yeah.
Very clean. Enzo Mari, if anyone's interested.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place
awesome.
To send it out.
All right. We're back with the short intros this week. Thanks for listening.
And outros.
Rockler Desk Challenge. And we'll see you next time on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Do you think I made that too short of an outro, or you think we're okay?
It was perfect.
Wait, 5-star review. All right, bye.
There you go. Vamp.
Not too shabby.